Welcome to another edition of the Untold Patriots Stories podcast with Scott Prusak and Dave Usher, where you'll hear stories told by the players and media members.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Untold Patriot Stories. I'm Scott Prusak, along with Dave Usher. And our guest tonight was a running back for the Patriots, played for the Patriots from 1980 to 82, Vegas Ferguson. Vegas, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Scott. I appreciate you guys having me.
Hey, Vegas. Appreciate you coming on. I know this is a Patriots podcast, but you accomplished so much before coming here. I really have to talk about it. So you're an Indiana guy,
right?
Born in Richmond, went to Richmond High School, all-state team for 74 and 75, North Central Conference all-conference team, 74 and 75, high school All-American team, 75, most valuable player in the North-South All-Star game, 76, and you set the RHS school rushing record with 2,277 yards, average of 7.9 per carry, which is insane, and had 40 touchdowns.
Wow. Well, I don't know about all that. I can't remember. my son just reminded me. I had a birthday the other day. He broke my high school record. That's what he told me. The other day. So he owns it now. My son. So
that's supposed to be your present, or
no? It's his birthday. I celebrate with him until he said that. I had no clue.
And then as an Indiana guy, you went to the University of Notre Dame. You were the most outstanding offensive player in the 78 Cotton Bowl, where you upset Earl Campbell's University of Texas team 38-10. That must have been a pretty cool thing. Sports Illustrated cover man, 924-79. I don't see that in the background, but I'm sure that's in the house somewhere.
Oh, no, I don't put anything. As you notice, I don't have anything up in my house.
All right.
Relating to, I have it all packed away because it's a team game. We get into that more.
Okay, yeah. And then first team All-American in 79. Just to round it all off, when you left Notre Dame, you were the leading rusher of all time there. You set records for single season rushing of 1437, a single game of 255. In a career of 3,472, average yards per game in 79, 130.6 yards in a career of 89. And you had 17 games of 100 or more yards. And one last one, all-time record for scoring touchdown 17 in the season in 79 and career of 32.
That was quite
you don't
a
have to say anything. Yeah,
I mean... I appreciate y'all saying, but if, you know,
wow,
people get the misconception, you know, that you've done all that. But I had some good teammates and some good coaches. So I always refer. That's why you don't see anything in my house with trophies and stuff, because I always believed it was a team game. The only reason I got noticed was because of the people around me that helped me achieve things like that. So.
That's a good outlook, but I mean, you can brag a little bit. I mean, all that brought you to what in 98 they inducted you into the Indiana Football Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that's a little place up here. it's a closed down post office. That's what they call it. Well, but they made it to the Hall of Fame, and it's now defunct. They as a matter of fact, it went out. They went out. So,
oh wow.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, but again, you know, those kind of things. I don't get excited about. Yeah, again, it goes back to, you know, people helping you get to where you get, you know, got to. So, I didn't do it on my own. And football's a team game, as you know. So
we ask a lot of the guys in your generation, and we just talked about all the great things you did in college, and obviously a historic program with the Fighting Irish. And then you come from that building, albeit it's smaller in person when you see it, but still a wonderful place. Mm-hmm. Little different than coming to Foxborough Stadium? Do you have any culture shock with that?
Well, you know, it's funny because it was funny because before the, you know, coming out, you know, they talked about the draft coming out of school. And then, you know, some of the guys they were really paying attention to the draft and stuff. And only thing I said to him, I said, I was going to go down to Purdue. My girl, my ex-wife went to Purdue. So I would go down and see her. And it was in the day of the draft, I was on my way to see her at, down to Purdue. And before I left, I told the guys who were sitting around listening to, I guess the way you can listen to the draft at that time or something.
Yeah.
And, I told them, the only thing I wish for is that I go to a warm weather team.
Well, you didn't get that. You didn't get that.
Oh my God. I said, I don't know how I found out I went New England drafted me, but I was on my way. I was down at Purdue, but anyway, that was the only thing, you know, shocked me. I said, I asked for everybody else went to a warm team. Another guy went to San Francisco and one other guy went to New Orleans and I went to New England and I'm going, what did I do? and at that point, I mean, it didn't really matter where you went. I was just, it wasn't, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, you're appreciative that somebody would want to draft, you know, and right. Thought enough of you to draft you. That's what I thought, you know, and I was appreciative of that fact. I didn't have any ill feelings towards New England or anybody else for that matter. I just wanted to be, you know, the best person I could be when I got there, you know, and to help the team.
So I think Dave was saying, though, that the way you played in college and then you went into probably Schaefer Stadium when you got there, or was it?
Yeah, Schaefer Stadium.
So when you walked in there, did you think you regressed back to high school? Or?
No. Again, see, well, the press box was bigger than, I think, Notre Dame. I mean, you know, the press box was bigger. I didn't really pay attention to that. I mean, as a matter of fact, we had a photo shoot or something, you know, out in the stadium, and, see, I wasn't used to turf. I had never, you know, we didn't play on, we played teams that had turf, but our field was grass. So to be, you know, to find out it was a turf field, I didn't really know if I was going to help me or hurt me, but that was something different. I mean, I didn't really look at the surroundings or how good or bad it looked. You know, back then it was still, the league was still, you know, developing.
Yep.
And so I had, you know, Lamar Lundy was my cousin. He's from Richmond and, he played with the Rams and he had a lot of success and to follow in his footsteps. I was proud of that.
Yep.
But it wasn't something that, I relished in, you know what I'm saying? I was thankful that I had the ability to do it and somebody would draft me. That's where it came down to.
So it seems like, you know, you talked about it being a team game. So if I would ask the question, who influenced your career the most, you know, whether in high school, you know, college, who had the biggest impact on guiding you to the NFL and then who played the biggest part in your success?
You know, it's hard. It's everybody along the way. I think starting back when gray white football, we played flag football. My stepbrother got me introduced in sixth grade to flag football. And I just thought, you know, I never played organized football. We played football in the schoolyard. Whoever gets the ball get tackled, or you play amongst the bigger guy kids in the schoolyard here, you know, in my neighborhood. But for the most part, that's why I learned the formal how to get in the stands, who the positions, you know, all the positions, who blocked and who did all, who's the quarterback, and that's why I learned all that stuff and at that level. And I was really appreciative of that coach. With, you know, he wanted to win, so he came out and got a bunch of my friends and winning the league, the little league, the sixth grade league. And then so it developed from there. From there we went to seventh grade tackle football. Pop Warner, we had Pop Warner here, it was real popular. All along the way, you know, you learn the game from different people and from a different perspective. It wasn't that I wanted to score every touchdown. And that was one thing I was really appreciative of. I wasn't there to be the star from the very beginning. I just learned the game and I was able to do some things. And, you know, people saw my talent and they tried to develop it. And I never thought, you know, that I was better than anybody. I think that's what helped me, that, you know, those kind of things. So it really did, you know, help me along in my life all around, you know, well rounded me. Because that went on into life, you know, that that you got to work hard and that you got to do the right thing and you got to help people and people because people will help you, you know, so that have helped me along the way. So it's really good for me to learn that early in life.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah. You came here, your first round draft pick, coming to a team that had a winning record and had a pretty good squad. You know, Chuck Foreman was there. He had a pretty good name for himself at that point, even though he's maybe towards the end of his career. And a fan favorite around here, Moise Tatupu.
Mostly.
Backfield with you. Mm-hmm. So what were your thoughts when you first came?
I got it. It's funny that you ask, because when we came in for camp, you know, we flew into Boston, you know, Boston, and then we had to drive out to Foxborough. Brian College at that time.
Yep, it was Brian back then. Yep.
And so I get in the van, and then he jumps in with Chuck Foreman. I'm saying, Lord have mercy, this cat. I watched him play. You know what I'm saying? I said, watch this guy play. I watched this guy play. He's good.
Yeah.
You know. And I was really, you know, kind of like, I kind of had to sit back and say, man, you know, I could, and we got to introduce, talked on the way and stuff. It was a experience at that point for me, because, you know, rookie coming in, experience and, you know, getting to meet, all these guys who have been playing. You know, I've heard of Sam Cunningham. I did get to play a year with him. Horace Ivory, Stanley Morgan, Steve Grogan, I didn't play with Leon, but I got to meet Leon and, Gray. So, you know, a lot of guys, you know, I didn't really follow football that closely, but I did remember Sam Cunningham because, you know, Notre Dame played against USC, you know, and so, heard of his name all the time. But Stanley Morgan, you know, these guys were just Tennessee, you know, because Tennessee whooped us my senior year. They kind of blew us out of Tennessee. So Stanley, you know, of course, Roland James came in from Tennessee, the same year, you know, he was drafted ahead of me in the first round. And, so, you know, it was just learning. I mean, I just came in with an open mind. No perceived, notions of what was going to happen, which is good. And just kind of went with the flow, you know what I'm saying? So, I had a pretty good camp. I think I had a good camp with those guys, learned a lot, you know, and, the thing I really recognized, I said, I saw guys, people come in, free agents come in and everything. And I really was kind of set back because I saw some guys that were pretty good get released. Whether it's a lot of running backs, I said, man, this guy can play, you know, and they let him go, you know, I'm going. So there's a lot of that taught me a little bit about, you know, there's a lot of hidden things that people don't see. You see a lot of talented guys go through the league that don't get a chance.
Yep.
And that hurt me because of the limited, you know, roster sizes. But these guys could play. You know what I'm saying? So, and I think some of them pretty good. I kind of looked at them and said, wow, you know. But you learn, you know, that it's a game. It's a business. And so everybody have the owners and the general managers have preconceived notions of who they want. And they're not going to, you know, and they're not going to, you know, go away from that. And so that taught me that it's a business. And so they're going to do what they're going to do.
Yep.
And so I learned early that you're only a number. If you're not producing the way they think you should be producing, then you're not going to be there.
Yep.
So then that's part of it. You know, that's part of a job. You know, if you don't produce or do the right things, you're not going to be there.
Yeah. So, I mean, your first year, you had 211 rushes, 818 yards and two TDs. So you had a pretty good first year with the Pats.
Well, I had Donnie Calhoun. I'm going to tell you, man, you talking about that cat.
He could block, huh?
Oh man, well he was, and I blocked for him. We both ended up with 800 some yards that year, you know, that year. You know, so I mean, and it, the thing, like I said, the thing that kind of threw me is, there's a lot of games at the pro level. I mean, like I said, I mean they gonna play who they want to play, and so what got they wouldn't let me and Donnie stay in Calhoun. They wouldn't let us stay in on passing plays. Because they wanted their, who they wanted in there, you know, to play. And I thought that was kind of crazy because it's kind of threw our rhythm off.
Yep.
You know,
and you caught a decent amount of balls that year too, didn't you? You caught like 20 something balls.
Yeah, 22 catches. Yep.
Yeah, but they went to a platoon because they wanted, Chuck there. They had brought Chuck in. And so, and Andy Johnson was there. Yep. Horace Ivey was there. And so, they wanted those guys to, they put them in on passing plays. And it kind of threw men down, like men kind of home and say, well, what's the problem? And said, little did we know that there was something else behind the scene going on, see? But it threw off our rhythm because, we get in a groove and all of a sudden we're coming out of the game.
Yeah.
And so that kind of threw me when they started doing that kind of stuff. And so, we had to go what they wanted to do. So, yeah. But it really kind of, you know, we got through the first year doing that okay. But it became an issue. You know, the next year I got hurt early in the next year. So we're getting into more of that. But I'm just saying that, the mechanics of the game, people don't always see, they don't see behind the scenes.
Right.
And so, that can kind of throw your team off, if you're not doing it right. Everybody's not, what they should be.
Right.
Don't think they should be. Anything.
So you said something was going on behind the scenes. What was happening at that time?
You got coaches have favorites, and so, we're gonna find a way to have these guys play.
Right.
And so, but little do they know, see, they don't, they get away from, because they do that, they get away from the continuity of the team,
yep.
Of the team scheme. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Grogan can throw the ball, right?
Yep.
You got Stanley Morgan out there. You got, Harold Jackson. You got, you got guys who can catch the ball.
Couple of all pros. Yeah.
Yeah. All pro guys, So now you got a good running attack and you got the good passing attack. So what do you do? You know what I'm saying? So how do you share that? Then the guys you want to play in the passing game, because you got the guys who can run it. Now you need two guys that you feel like can add to the receiving part of it. And so it just kind of threw me off because I always thought, that you play the players that are producing.
Right.
And so anyway, that didn't, man, I'll just leave it at that.
All right.
You
can't tease the audience when you say something, then you gotta kind of explain it a little.
Well, you can't, it's because I didn't look at it, because then I didn't look at it as a negative.
Yeah.
That's just something they're in control and that's what they want to do.
Yeah.
But to me, we're catching the ball, we're running the ball, Calhoun are blocking for each other, and we're rolling. Everything is going, steaming. Then all of a sudden now you want to throw the ball all the time. You get away from the run and you go to the pass. In situations where you have to, but sometimes before because something else is happening. But anyway.
Don't keep going there. If you're not going to go all the way, you can't keep going there. So, all right.
So we'll go off that topic.
Please.
Go back to you saying it's a team game. Two-part question. You ran behind some great Patriots with John Hanna, obviously. Mm-hmm. Would love to hear your thoughts on him. And then also a guy that, as a Patriots fan for my whole life, I probably didn't give enough credit, but as I've talked to people that played with you and him, Pete Brock. I've heard some wonderful things about Pete. So give us your thoughts on those two.
Well, Len Kitus was our center at first, and then Pete Brock again was backing him up. And they were working him, you know, they're starting to work Pete in. Tremendous. I mean, you know, Pete, him and him and John matched up just right. Len Kitus was good too, don't get me wrong. But again, they had their scheme. The coaching staff had their scheme and what they wanted to do. And so they eventually worked Pete in, and you got John again. You just can't, you know, he's just in another world. And that guy takes off. He said, make sure you follow me, follow me, follow me. I said, I'll follow. Don't worry about that. I'm going to follow you. Don't worry about that.
And I have to tell you once.
Yeah. But, and so that, you know, John really helped, in that respect, you know, just, you know, when he pulls, you just got to watch where he goes. And then when he, you know, he clears the host for you. So he was outstanding in that, man. We had Shelby Jordan, and there's a couple of few other guys on there as well that were very good as well. But John really was a standout. I mean, in terms of, his effort, his determination to play the game at a high level all the time. I mean, I don't know how the guy did it. I mean, just every play, he's at 100%. And I admire that about him. And really, again, you're talking about the Florida game. You know what I'm saying? When we run the ball, we're running, Jack. We're running. I mean, ain't no doubt about it. We're going to get 5 or 6 yards every time. And that was a good thing as well. So
now you can't imagine Tanner was a big guy, and you're not the biggest guy. So like people probably didn't even see you behind him. You probably just kind of flashed out from behind and took off.
Yeah. Oh yeah, no doubt about it. I'm telling you, something. They didn't, because he'd blind them. You know,
yeah.
John would knock them down. They'd be on their backs, whoever he's blocking. So yeah. it just made it easy for us to make the cuts and do the things we needed to do, you know, in terms of running the ball from that point. But, I admire John for that. I admire all the guys I've learned stuff from. Like I said, Horace, we had, Andy Johnson. We had some good guys there that were really, personable guys, you know, and it really looked out for your best interests.
You mentioned Bill Ankitis, who went on to become a dentist. Mm-hmm. And then you had a couple other teammates that did interesting things. Steve McMichael was on the squad with you as a rookie.
Praise. That's my boy. Texas. Now, remember now, we just played them. My rookie year, me and him came in together.
Yeah.
Crazy. He's on me every day. Because we beat him in the Cotton Bowl.
Yeah.
See? So he was one of the line. He was one of the line. He said, "Alfred, we should beat you guys. We should." I said, "It's just a game, man. It's over now. We're
teammates now, yeah. Man. Right?
Yeah. Don't worry about that. You know, because he's a defensive guy. He's always running around talking about how strong he is and stuff. But we was good. We became good friends. Okay. Go ahead. You had a question.
Did you see him becoming a wrestler? What did you think when he was in the spotlight doing that?
I didn't know he even did that.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a wrestler for a while. No,
he made more money doing that than he did playing football.
I didn't know that. There wasn't like a WWE and all that kind of
WCW,
stuff?
I think.
Yeah, WCW. When,
really?
Yeah.
Yep.
And he got the I'm going to leave that alone, but it wouldn't surprise me that he did well.
Yeah.
He had that makeup, you know. I'm rough and tough, you know.
Yeah.
Him and his wife.
Crazy.
His wife was in it with him too.
Oh, really?
Yep.
I gotta look that up.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you wanna look her up.
I think he meant
Mongo wrestling.
I know what he meant, but I
know what he meant too. I'm not mad at him. I go look at him now.
All right, there you go.
But I like Mike. Steve was a good guy, though.
One more teammate with interesting, a guy that graduated right before you at Notre Dame, Bob Golic, was on that squad.
He sure was when I came in. I forget Bob.
Yeah, and he went on to do some.
Oh my God!
Yeah, you know, he was all over TV and stuff after. Yeah, he had a great career, absolutely. Yeah. But then he was like, you know, Saved by the Bell and all. I mean,
mm-hmm. Yeah, we tease him. When I see him, when we come back for our national championship gathering every 5 years now at Notre Dame, national championship celebration. And Bob comes in there with that long hair still. We're out of the 80s, and they still tease him about the bell stuff and all that kind of stuff. And he's doing well, though. I mean, he comes back for a lot of stuff to Notre Dame, and he still lives in the Cleveland area, and that's a good thing. We just don't get together as teammates enough, as the years go by. Sure. So, you're right. Him and, there was somebody, Mike Haynes was another one of my friends, good friend of mine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Another good friend of mine. Yeah. Cause I played Mike that 1 year before he went to the Raiders, several years after that. So now you make me reminisce a little bit.
That's fine. That's what this is all about. You smile and that's what it's all about.
Oh yeah. It's always good memories. I didn't have the greatest experience with the upper management, and I don't talk about that much because again, they need to do what they need to do. But the Sullivans at the time owned the team.
Yeah.
And, they ran it a little differently than they do today. And rightfully so. I mean, the money wasn't there like it is today.
Yeah.
And, again, we had a strike year my second year. I think 81, 82, 82.
Yep.
80, 81, 81. I got hurt the second game, and I was out for pretty much most of the season until the last four games. I came back to start the last four games of the 81 season. 80, and then 80, that's when we went 2-14.
Yep.
Earhart, and he's funny, but he came into the locker room. I think it was the last game or during the practice or something during that year, near the end of the season. And he says, some of you guys are going to wish I was still here. And I don't know, I didn't know what he meant when he said that at that time, but I found out. But even before that, that 80-81 season, we only lost, games like 1 point, field goal.
Yeah.
It was crazy. I mean, just the way we would lose games and we just couldn't get over that hump.
Yeah.
We were right in every game, but we just, we'd kick a field goal or something here or there. But anyway, that season 2-14, he got fired. And like I said, it came when he said to us as a group in the locker room, he said, some of you guys are going to wish I was, was still here. And in 82, we found out.
Ron Meyer.
We found out. That's all I'm going to tell you.
Yeah.
We found out.
All right. And, read between the lines.
Oh, yeah. That's it. And that's why, and that's when I wasn't there no longer. That's my last year. And I never thought, we had a good relationship, the Sullivans and I, because I would go in during the off season, especially after the 82 season that was our strike year too. Was a strike year. So I think after that, coming into 83 season, during the off season, I was talking to, I think it's Pat Sullivan then.
Yep.
And I said some things. I said, hey, it's respectful. I was respectful. I was appreciative where I was, but then I think I got a little bit too ahead of myself by, talking to him about how I felt about the coach, And I think they kind of taught me a lesson because I got back healthy and I was ready to play that year. And coming out of camp, you got your cut dates.
Yep.
And if they don't let you go early or trade you or whatever, then you're in trouble because, you mess around there and wait till the next game before the season starts, preseason game before the season, then when they cut you, you're out. And so if they don't trade you or something. So I knew something was up when they kept me. and they wouldn't let me play in the preseason games. And that was the writing, handwriting on the wall for me. Yeah. And I think that that showed me that, you know, you can't.
That conversation led to your playing time in the preseason.
Yeah. You see what I'm saying? So when they started doing that, then you know, something's up. Because they don't want you to get hurt, first of all. And that means they have to keep you. But anyway, I have no ill feelings towards that. They did what they thought they needed to do. But in the same sense, that kind of hurt my marketing value. And after that, it was tough for me to kind of, in 83, I kind of floated around, went to Cleveland. I went to Houston. You know, I tried out for some teams. I only stayed, Pruitt got hurt in Cleveland. I was sitting at home. I was sitting here in Richmond, Indiana.
Yeah.
And I told my wife then, I said, was watching the games and I said, Pruitt got hurt. I said, well, Cleveland will be calling me. And sure enough, I went out to the Raiders and they flew me out there to work out. And then they flew me, then they said they wanted me in Cleveland to come out to come out and work out for them. And so I ended up staying there, for about three games. And then after he got healthy again, they cut me. And then I went from there, and I was back in Richmond, watched TV. Next thing I know, Earl got hurt down in Houston. And I told my wife, I said, well, I'm going to Houston. Next thing I know, anyway, the Raiders had called me, and they had me out there. And then my wife called me and said that they wanted me to fly. They to fly from California to Houston. And so I got to Houston. I said, you know, they worked me out. He said, I said, I didn't have no clothes. Remember, I just flew out to work out and I was going to fly through Houston to work out. And I said, I'm going back home. Well, I said, well, you can't go back home. I said, well, I don't have anything with me but what I brought. Well, you're just going to do what you got to say and what you got. Got to do what you
got. Yeah, that'd be some clothes, right?
Yeah. Well, I didn't have to. Well, I knew better than that. Because remember, Earl got hurt. So I got to talk to those, you know, Pruitt and when I was at Cleveland and, Earl down in Houston. And then anyway, about three games into that, he got healthy again and they wouldn't let me play. They wouldn't let me, at least Cleveland let me run some kickoffs back, but, Houston didn't let me play at all. They didn't even want me to touch the field. So, after Earl got, then I was done for the rest of the season. So I think I played six games, I was with two teams, I think three games each for that year. And then I was done. And then I went to the USFL. From there, I went to Tampa. Well, I take that back. In 84, I went to Tampa. They let me come down and try out. And then after that, I was done. After that, I said, I'm not doing this anymore.
Yeah.
And, ended up playing in the USFL that year. And then after that, after the 84 season, I was in the Chicago Blitz, and the league went under.
Yep.
And then I just stayed in Chicago and worked, had kids and about 4 years,
yep.
4 or 5 years. That's about my extent. And I wasn't hurt because that's something, you know, to me, it was it was just something, you know, that I got the experience. It wasn't something that I built my whole life around. So it was easy for me. It was easy for me to walk away. You know, I thought I had a lot left in me, but I felt like at that point, I don't need to beat my head up against the wall to play in this league. You know what I'm saying? I got my degree. I can go out and get a job. I can still do what I need to do.
Leave healthy with all your.
Yeah. I was fortunate, but like I said, the hamstring was the only thing I had, coming out, and it was better when I left and I was fine then. Then never had a major knee injuries, shoulder, you know, no operations, no major, head trauma. I was really fortunate there. And so today I'm able to walk, you know, and talk and do what I need to do and not be
enjoy the grandchildren. And
yeah,
right? There you go. And so, you know, it was a good experience. I think, you know, in life, people looking in think, you know, it's all this and all that. But when you actually have an opportunity to participate in something like that and see what it really is, what it's really about, then you don't, you know, I think it's a great league. I think it's a great, I still do. I still think there's a lot of good things about the NFL but you got to be prepared for life. I tell guys today, I said, yes, it's good. You're healthy, you're strong. I said, but you better prepare. You can't play football. You know, the saddest thing I experienced was one day that the running backs were all, sitting in a group. And, one guy said, I'm going to play football for the rest of my life. Hmm. And I looked at him. I said, man, are you serious? I said, yeah, I'm going to play the rest of my life. And all were laughing. They was all, and he really meant it.
Yeah,
he really meant it. And I said to myself, "Wow, what am I doing? I'm sitting around here with and people are thinking this is going to be their life.
Yeah,
you know, and it's a short lived game.
Not for long.
Yeah, it's short lived. Especially at our position back then, it was only 3 years, 4 years.
Yeah,
and now it's even less than that for running backs. And so, I mean, that was an eye opener for me. And it started me on my thought process of how do I get myself prepared while I'm still playing the game? And so I went for, when I was in New England a few years there, I worked for IBM in off season to try to get, into the mindset that if I do have to work, I know how to, go to, business. I know how to, talk and, to people in business, And so I was in sales and with IBM, in Boston. And so before I left, so it kind of got me, thinking. Okay. So that was a good thing because, when I did leave, I had to get a job and thank God I had my diploma, I had my degree and I could do, and do what I needed to do. So I just caution, you see guys today that get caught up in the game, and then when they walk away from the game, they don't have anything, nowhere to go. Health wise, they're beat up and broke up, but at least they made it to that level. Some of the college kids don't even make it that far,
right?
They don't even make it. The 2 or 3 years in college now. Do you see the way they're flying around and that's another story. But anyway. Good experience. Though. I value that experience. I learned a lot, and I still am happy that I had the opportunity to do it.
Well, I love your attitude. Yeah. I mean, and it's amazing that you were planning for that even while you were playing football.
Mm-hmm.
But you brought up a couple of times you mentioned him, and I'd love to get your thoughts on him, because the Tyler Rose, you beat him in the Cotton Bowl. You replaced them for a little bit in Houston. Earl Campbell was one of my favorite non-Patriots growing up. Unfortunately, like you'd said, he has a lot of health issues now.
Yeah.
But what were your thoughts of him playing against them and then having a chance to be on the team with them?
Well, didn't really get to know him that well, but just watching him, from a player standpoint, just to see the beating he took every game, that amazed me that he, that was beyond belief. I mean, why would you, I don't run like that.
And you know, a little different style between.
He was a battering ram. That's what he was. He was a battering.
Even when they played us in the Cotton Bowl, I watched him. I said, man, he ran the ball over 100. He got over 100 some yards, but he took a beating. And, my mindset has always been, as a running back, don't get hit. Square. You're going to get hit. Don't get hit square. Don't get hit. Always get hit going away. Always go down before you get beat up, you know, somebody just comes up to knock you out. And he was just the opposite of that.
He ran into contact.
Yeah, that was his, I mean, and it's phenomenal, But you see the price of that,
right?
You see, and even back then, I didn't know that was going to be the case with myself. I just felt that was my belief, even as a kid. I ain't going to let you hit me square. You know, I'm going to make a move on you. And then if I can't get away, I'm going to the ground. I'm going to run either that or run out of bounds.
There you go, right?
And, it's funny because when I went to Notre Dame, that was my style. I didn't run over people in high school. I didn't know Pop Warner. I'd make a move on them and go around them, or, you know. But when I went to Notre Dame, Dan Devine was my freshman year. We was running, you know, we were running plays and against the defense, and I would break away, and I would go side to side. You know, they say go east and west, north and south, rather. I would go east and west. He'd be up on the top of the thing, and you hear the squat box going, Ferguson, run north and south. And I say to myself, you ain't the one down there getting hit.
Yeah.
Because I ain't trying to get hit. So that was funny because, you know, God brought back that memory that, and because of that, you know, I was able to walk away from the game. You know, you still got the quirks, you know, hit, you know, little pains here and there, but you can't run the ball as much as I did my senior year. And I was almost like an Earl Campbell, but from the sense that I didn't take the hits.
Yeah.
You know,
I tried to avoid it.
Yeah, I got the carries, but I didn't take the hits. And, that's what helped me a lot, to get through it. But, yeah, Earl was a good guy. I talked to him when he was down in Houston, he was just tired. He looked tired all the time.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And that was something I noticed, even when he hadn't played for a few games. He just, you know, he just sat there and, you know, kind of like he'd beat up then,
yeah.
You know, and, from all the years in college and then, you know, the few years in the pros where he got, where, you know, they just used him for a battering ram the whole time. So, good experience. So, I mean, you know, he's still getting along and but you just, you know, pray for guys like that all, you know, that they, you know, can live a comfortable life.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, with the few aches and pains I have, I mean, I can't imagine what he goes through.
Yeah.
So, it was a good experience.
So one of the things I'd be curious, you know, We're suffering through what's been one of the worst Patriot seasons in a while.
Mm-hmm.
You are on a 2-14 team. So what is that like? I mean, what is it like to have to go to practice every day, you know, suffer through that? And there was a coaching change at the end of that 2-14 season, which people are talking about now. But how did it seems like somebody like you has a positive outlook. How did you maintain being positive, you know, losing that many games?
What the problem? I mean, no, we because we knew how we lost them. See, it wasn't that we got blown out.
Yeah, we
didn't get blown out. We were in every game. I mean, we should have won most of them. But again, you don't. You know, you're a professional. You know, at that point, you know, that's part of the game. You know, you just got to overcome it.
Yeah,
and sometimes you can. And sometimes you can't, because you don't know the mindset of everybody else on the team. You know, I know where I was at.
Right.
I'm going to go out there and play. I ain't got a problem. I mean, hey, you know, win and loss is just win and loss. It's when you come off the field, what can you say to yourself?
Right.
Did I give everything I had? And I can guarantee you, that's why I don't look back at that as a bad experience for me, because I know every time I went out to another field, I was playing hard.
Yeah.
And I was playing to win. And I think, that's one thing about that, and I think that might have been what Earhart was alluding to before he left. Some of you guys are going to wish I was still here, because he might have felt people weren't putting in what they should be putting in, especially in the latter part of the season when we didn't have no hope we were going to get in the playoffs or anything else. You just got to play.
Well, that's
part of the game. You know,
I had the question I was going to ask you was, so, you know, when the losing keeps going, then you got guys that, you know, there's guys like you, they're going to give 110% no matter what's going on. But then you have the people that, you know, they know that it might be their last year with the team, so they're kind of saving themselves because they don't want to get hurt. They kind of, even back then, you kind of thinking as a free agent, not part of the team, because you want to make sure that you can go and play for that next team if you're not going to be around.
Oh, yes. I never I don't know.
Associate with people like that.
I just didn't notice it. You know what I'm saying? Because, I didn't know if guys were, I didn't see it. Yeah. It probably were. But I didn't, because that wasn't in my mindset, you know, and I wasn't around guys like that.
Yeah.
You know, I was around the Stanley Morgans and the Harold Jack, you know, people who were winners, you know, wanted to win, you know, and
people with a mindset like you.
You know what I'm saying? And so I didn't, you know, I look at the 2-14 season. To me, I don't see any, because of where I was. I mean, I was just say I was focused on making sure I did everything I could to taking care of my responsibilities and carrying the ball and making sure I didn't fumble it and making sure, you know, those kind of things and making sure I blocked and did my assignments. If you're doing that, you're not going to think about the record.
Yeah.
I went to practice, not practice hard, you know, because I was still recovering from my ankle injury and in the last four games, I mean, I played like it was the first season. Yeah. Cause I hadn't played for a long time. So that might've been where I was at. You know, I didn't really play a lot of games.
Yeah.
Until the end of the season.
Yeah.
So, it's tough. I hardly even think about it because of the effort I put in. And I can't say that what everybody else thought, would think. So.
Right.
Let me take you back. That's a good question. Mm-hmm. Let me take you back to Notre Dame for a second. If I did my math right, you were a freshman when Rudy Rudiger had his moment.
Were you there?
Yeah. So were you there for that?
No, I wasn't a freshman. You know what? No, that was my, I came in and he came in, Yvonne came in 75. And then Rudy, I came in 76. But Rudy was a graduate assistant.
Oh, okay.
When I was coming, you know, I was coming into camp on the 76s. And that guy, he was just a riot. You know, we were going through tour days.
Yeah.
And I'm a freshman. I ain't ever been really going against the first team defense. And we go back to, just before the students got, before the students got there. And we're going through 2 days. And he'd come back to the dorm. I didn't know Rudy. He said, man, don't you guys think this is great? Come back from morning practice. He's talking about, don't you guys think this is a great place to, man, you better, we use every kind of, you know, cuss word we can think of. And I said, man, I didn't pay no attention. Yeah, you know, I mean, I wasn't the kind of guy to cuss at people or nothing. But some of them guys would cuss him out.
He's a little too rah-rah, huh?
Yeah, he was rah-rah, man. I said, Lord have mercy. And we became the best of friends, Rudy and I, because he had told me before he had the movie out. When I was with the Patriots, he was in Baltimore, and he would come down, and when we went to Baltimore to play Baltimore, he would come down, take me to dinner and stuff. We'd go out. Well, and And he was running some kind of a cleaning business. They clean buildings or something. His little company, I think, somebody like that. And he was telling me, man, I'm going to do this. I'm going to get this. I said, oh, yeah, go, Rudy. I'm all for it, man. Go. I hope you. He said, I'm going to Hollywood. They're going to talk about me about this movie, make a movie. I said, well, that's good, man. I said, you got going on. And since then, I've seen him. He's come to Richmond a few times. We have alumni here that has a they take care of kids have been abused, and then so he brings fundraisers. He has fundraisers. So the school system brought him in here, and you know, we've talked over the years. When, you know, I've seen him at Notre Dame a few times, but just a great story. Just a great, and I mean, and now I can see his enthusiasm because he made up his mind he was going to do something. He's going to play, and he did it. And I admire people like that. Admire the tenacity, the keep goingness. And he said, I'm going to play, and anybody going to stop me? All the odds against him, everything. And so I respect that of him. And, I think a lot of them, we're still friends today.
Yep.
Right. And so that was a good experience. And I didn't see, you know, the part where, you know, I mean, I didn't see the movie, but the guys told me, you know, some of the older guys that were there at the time, they you know, they've seen some of the movie. They said, well, you know, and they kind of embellished some of
it. It's a movie. It's a movie.
It's a movie. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
And I don't know. It was good. I mean, just, you know, just to know that, you know, somebody thinks enough of, you know, of Notre Dame to want to be there.
Yeah.
You know, and with all the odds against them. And that's a great story for me. And to know the person who did it, that's even more special.
All right. So we'll start to wrap this up a little bit. So it's called Untold Patriot Stories, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we always ask every guest that we want you to give a story. It can be anything, your best memory, a funny story about a meeting or a coach or a player, but something that the fans of our podcast that listen would only hear because it came from your mouth on the podcast.
Oh, what could it be?
So one story.
Because I don't.
One story with a Patriot.
Lord have mercy. What could it be? I think to me, and I always reflect back on this, the people I've met and relationships I've built over the years. I think it's not so much a story as it's about life that, you're able to meet people from all walks of life. Russ Francis, you know, people like that, yeah. The Stanley Morgans, the Steve Grogans, the John Hannas, the, Chuck Foremans, Sam Cunningham's, that's a story. People you would never have met in your life. And then from all parts of the country, from all, you know, from every walk of life, to be able to team up with somebody like that, those kind of people, and say, hey, you know, it was more than just a football. It's a family, it's a relationship, you know? And so it's not so much a story that I look for certain things, funny things that happen. They all throughout the whole time we had those times. But the things I remember most is those people and the way they, you know, and the way they carried themselves.
Yeah.
And they're true professionals from my perspective.
I did want to give a special shout out to a big fan of the podcast for kind of making this happen, Andy Bedard, who kind of got us together and got you on this podcast. So Andy, when you listen to this, wanted to give you a shout out. Thanks for hooking us up with Vegas.
Yeah, thanks, Andy. But so one person though hasn't been mentioned who has a soft spot in my heart, because the first show that I did for this, we interviewed Tony Collins.
Yes.
I know he was there with you at the same time. So give us your thoughts on Tony.
Tony, a wonderful guy. Man, you talk about somebody determined. Mm-hmm. I always remember Tony as being one of those kind of guys. I'm gonna get your spot. I'm gonna get your spot. and he ended up getting my spot. But I'm just saying that he gets the biggest competitor. He's competitive. Do whatever he has to do to help you win, kind of guy. I didn't get to know Tony well, because I said I wasn't there that long. But I knew he was going to be successful from the way he carried himself, the way he worked at his game. That's what I remember most about Tony. And his funny leg, his legs always, he ran funny. And I always remember when he get in his stands, he'd take off, and we looking at his legs just flopping back and forth, going every which way. But you know, he was, I was so happy for him to, that he went on and, you know, played the number of years he played, and, wish I could have been a, more of a part of his life to help possibly direct him as a mentor kind of thing. Sure. But he's coming out of, he came out of it. He's went through some things. He's come out of it and he's doing better. He's living his life. He wanted to live. Yeah. And that's the main thing, that he's, you know, that he was able to recover and go on and live a better life.
Well, you talk about the untold Patriot story. You know, when we talked to him, he talked about, I think, you know, wanted to keep his job. They actually injected him. He decided to take some cortisone and different things to keep him out in the field, which I guess was fairly prevalent back then to keep him going. But
I think I know that's one of my problems. I don't know about that part of it. He knew, but I mean, as he went through it, that's one thing. Me and Coach, my man Myers, got into it about me being hurt and him wanting me to play. Hmm. That was one of the things that got me and him, got me at odds with Myers when he came in. Yeah. And I pulled my hamstring. He felt like I needed to be out there trying to play, and I told him I'm not going to play. When my leg is messed, I'm not playing. I'm not going out there and trying to play.
And that's not an injury you typically play through.
You know, no,
that's something you need. You got to
let it rest. But he wanted me to. He talked about the training. Go. He needs to get out. He needs to be out there practicing. No, I'm not. I'm not practicing. I'm not doing that because my leg is hurt.
Right.
And it could put me in more jeopardy. And I'm not. You know, that's from the coach's standpoint. He wants his best players out there. I understand that. But I'm not going to take no shots. I'm not going to do anything to jeopardize my health for this game. Yep. If I can't play it natural or I can't play it the way I need, you know, healthy, I'm not going to play. And so that's part of, you know, probably another reason we had odds with each other. And I think, you know, he came out with that college mentality in terms of, you're going to do what I tell you to do. Yeah. And you don't do that to me. And I said, I got a kid. You don't talk to me like I'm a kid.
Right.
Because this is a professional level. Mm-hmm. And so that's one thing me and him didn't get along on, because he couldn't talk to me like a kid. And I wasn't going to he wasn't going to disrespect me like that. I respected him, but I wasn't going to let him disrespect me.
Yeah.
Like I told him, I'll lead the game before I do that.
Yeah.
It's not that important to me. And I have to, I'm going to respect everybody until you disrespect me.
Right.
And so I think that's one thing we got into with Myers. And that's one reason, you know, that's probably another reason why I left there. But I mean, again, that was, he's coming as a young coach. He wants, you know, he wants to
make a name for himself. Yeah.
Make a name, he's in control. He is. He's in control. But there's a certain way you do that. Right. You can talk to people in a manner that's respectful and get their attention.
Right.
Without having to say, you talk down to them. And that's one thing I wouldn't take. I mean, that didn't help me. That didn't help me. But you know what? I've got a clear conscience, and I'm living a better life.
That's all you. That's all. That's all you can do, man.
And I'm thankful. Now, thank you guys for having me on, Scott and Dave. I thank you for having me on. I appreciate you guys, and I look forward to coming out there again. I love that accent. I love the seafood. And I miss all that. And so
you'll be back out again. I would imagine. So
yeah, we'll be happy to take you out if you're around.
Well, I appreciate that. Andy did a good job when I was out there. So I appreciate him.
Andy's a good guy. So one of the things I was just going to say is, you know, it was great talking to you tonight. Wish you the best of luck, best of health. And to give Tony a plug, if you haven't read his book, I think it's Broken Road, I think.
Yeah, that's his book, yeah.
And I'll look it up, yeah.
And also, if you want, I'll tell you now, if you want to listen to the podcast, I think we did a two-parter with him, right, Dave? Was it two?
Yeah.
If you want to listen to some powerful stuff, listen to the podcast.
Okay.
Yeah, all right. He goes through everything he went through, and now, like you said, he's out on the other side, but there's some stories in there that were really...
I can't imagine.
A guy like you would enjoy it.
Well, not only that, but if he was able to tell you that, think how many other guys who didn't get that opportunity to tell you.
Right.
That's a dark. There's a dark side of this game as well. Well, unfortunately,
yeah.
And he was fortunate enough to come out coming out of it in a good way. So a lot of them don't.
We, you know, when we started this podcast, you know, we've kind of, the podcast has kind of grown and kind of went in a couple of different directions. And, but when we started this, it was, you know, guys like you that were around, you know, previous and went through some tough times, whether it's playing or personal stuff. And, you know, it's always good talking to you guys because I think you guys appreciate the life that you lived and, you know, playing and getting to come on the podcast and talk about, you know, memories. I mean, I think about the smile you had on your face when we first started talking, right? When you start to tell the stories, and that's really what it's all about. So
that is.
I'm glad you enjoyed it, and we enjoyed having you on, Vegas.
I appreciate you guys. You're wonderful, and I can anytime you want me back, I'll be back. But I really appreciate you taking the time to do that.
All right. Well, go enjoy the rest of your night and relax, and go enjoy some alone time, right?
I'm going to eat a peanut butter jelly sandwich. That's
there you go. All right.
I had fish last night.
Thanks, bye. Vegas.
Bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Untold Patriot Stories with Scott Prusak and Dave Usher. Please follow us on whatever platform you download your podcasts and be sure to tell your friends.